Welcome back to Season 3 of Multifamily Unpacked. I'm Tyler Christiansen, CEO of Funnel Leasing. Today's guest is Mike Whaling. Mike is the president and founder of 30 Lines and just a genuinely wonderful human. Mike and I have known each other for a number of years, and in this conversation, we talk about that history in multifamily and even more exciting, where we are today and where we're going. Mike had fabulous insight into how we leverage technology, low-hanging fruit, gaps in multifamily, and best of all, his passion around renters, housing affordability, and how we can all be better stewards of this industry. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Mike. I certainly did.
This episode of Multifamily Unpacked is brought to you by RMR Residential's Arium Sounds of Summer, a new contest where they're giving away an entire year of free rent to one lucky renter. They've partnered with influencers from music industry celebrities like country music star Craig Campbell and The Voice runner-up Thunderstorm Artists to TikTok micro-influencers and a Grammy Award-winning producer. The contest is open to any renter in America, and the deadline to submit is April 30th. You can find out more and submit your video at officialsoundsofsummer.com.
Mike, I'm really excited to have this conversation, given that you and I have known each other now for, I think, 10 years, and given that we both, I've been accused of being related to you. Like, people ask if we're brothers.
Yeah, I understand how that could happen, for sure.
I get a little less now that I'm going for the man bun, the baby man bun, but I think that still gives me permission to ask you tough questions. So before we get into your background, one of the things that us here at Funnel, we recognize is we're vendors. You know, what right do we have to tell multifamily operators how to run their business? So I'm going to ask you the first tough question. What gives you the right to tell people how they should operate their portfolios?
Man, you know, when I started in this industry, It was amazing how many people were like, you've never worked on site. What right do you have, right? Like, you've never worked on site. I think, one, I've screwed up more than just about anybody. And so I've learned from the school of hard knocks. And, you know, I think the other thing is I love to experiment, see what works. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is looking outside the industry. I know that we see a lot of chatter about this of like, hey, customer experiences are not the comp down the street. The customer experiences that people that we have to weigh ourselves against are like, what is Nike doing and Southwest Airlines and you know, Amazon.com, that kind of thing. I love looking at those, what those brands are doing and go, what would this look like for multifamily? And then experimenting with it and just seeing. And, you know, luckily a lot of those experiments have worked and have allowed us to really build up a thriving business. But I think the big thing that has helped me is really understanding as many parts of the business as possible. And I know that you're into this too, because I love digging into the numbers and talking with owners of properties about what is their financial goals for the property. Because that's a very different conversation from talking with a CMO or talking with a property manager or regional. Like, the more that I can do to understand this business and how it works and where the money goes. And, you know, lately it's been understanding utility expenses and insurance and how that impacts, you know, whatever money is available to put towards marketing. The more that I know that and can talk the talk and really understand how the rest of the business works, then we can talk about how our stuff fits in and complements it.
I love that, Mike. And I think something you just said there, there's a couple things I want to pick up on. One, I think whether all of us at some point start in a new industry, even if you start on site or you start at a corporate level, what you just talked about is you've learned the language. When you learn the language, you become proficient, right? I'm never going to look like I'm from Peru, but when I lived in Peru, I got to a point where I could make a phone call and they thought I was Peruvian. Yeah. I think you and I, you know, are, and there's a small group of folks that don't feel like outsiders because we love it. We live it, right? And I know dating back to, I remember my first year on the job, your friend of mine, Johnny Hanna, co-founder of Entrada Property Solutions back then, I remember him giving me advice of, hey, you got to work with this guy. This 30 Lines company is going to be here to stay. And what's really cool is 30 Lines is here. I mean, you think of all the companies that have come and gone. So when, I want to double click on, you mentioned that, you know, you've learned from the mistakes that you've made. So take us back in time, kind of, you know, how did you get started with 30 Lines? And specifically, you know, what are the things that you look back on now and say, man, I really learned a lot, or I wish I would have known that then. And then we'll dive from there into what you alluded to as some of the present challenges in multifamily.
Yeah, for sure. So you know, we got started. We've been doing this now for over 15 years, which is crazy to think about. But when we started, you know, I was going to, I was at another vendor. I was on the like low voltage technology side of the business. So I was going to OpTech and NAA and some of these other, and Broadband Properties Summit. And I got into the industry that way. And I was listening to folks talk about social media at the time. And it was MySpace. You know, it was, hey, we got to be on MySpace. Our residents are on MySpace. And what just didn't click with me was with what I was hearing the executives talk about on stage versus the actual, you know, what was being delivered to the residents. And we just, you know, I think I saw really early on where SEO and content marketing and social media were going to collide at some point. And today that's just kind of how we internet. It's like, it's all one thing. And so that became where we got off the ground. And, you know, we were just trying to find our way with content marketing, with social media, with, you know, we were helping clients with custom HTML templates for Craigslist ads when Craig actually allowed custom HTML. Like, we were doing like just whatever it took to try and figure out how do we bring in more traffic and more leads. But we saw really quickly that, you know, hey, I can't invite people into the house if the house is a mess. And so we started cleaning up websites. You know, we really take a lot of inspiration from e-commerce platforms and look at how do people shop online and what do they expect to see and how do they behave and how does that behavior evolve as they move through their journey, because this is a big journey that they're taking to find a new place to live. So just really understanding where are all those opportunities and where can we fit in with, you know, the other systems that are out there. If I look at, you know, your question about what do I wish I had done, I wish we had gotten into software a lot sooner, because that's been a huge for us in a number of different ways. And it allows us to kind of flex our muscles a little bit to say, hey, you know, now we have a platform where we can really influence how we help our customers in a much more foundational way. And we can really take all the things that we've learned and build that into our software platform.
I love that. Yeah. And there's some real humility in there, Mike, in admitting what you wish you would have done sooner. I think that's what great entrepreneurs do. I will say from the outside perspective, it always seems to me that you're a couple steps ahead of the curve. I remember you talking about bots when I didn't know what that was and nobody else was talking about that. And that speaks to, as you alluded to, the, you know, multifamily operators are not competing against the shop down the street, right? They're competing against the expectations that consumers have from all walks of life, right? If I have a phenomenal customer experience on Nike, .com, on Amazon, or whatever, on Netflix, that's my expectation. So let's bring to the present now. And I don't want to talk macroeconomics yet, but I want to talk about consumer expectations. You know, we at Funnel like to say we're renter centric. 30 Lines is always looking at consumer behavior data. So how, and it's funny, you were talking about MySpace, right? And of course, we laugh at these things, but at the time they were, you know, incredibly novel concepts. Why would I ever market on a social media? That's, you know, for friends, for high school students. So now, what are the consumer expectations that perhaps multifamily isn't aligned with yet? So I referenced bots, and you've been ahead of that, and that goes to kind of immediate communication. But if I'm a multifamily marketer, I'm listening here, you know, we laugh about social media. Obviously, that was a blind spot for a time. What are the misalignments that may be there? Or if I'm a marketer, how do I avoid getting misaligned with consumer expectations?
I don't think we do enough to raise awareness for people who are not in market shopping. Everything that we do is really kind of reactive. I don't want to call it reactive, but it's really focused on in-market shoppers. And if you look at how, you know, I think that you hear a lot of people talk about hospitality as kind of an adjacent industry that we can learn from. I also think that auto dealers and car sales is a very similar. That's a very similar buying behavior. I'm not in the market for a car all the time. Car dealers are constantly advertising to us because they want us to think of them when we are in market and need a new ride. So I think, one, what can we do to drive more awareness for those folks who aren't in market right now? The other thing that I think we have to realize is that we're in an industry that is incredibly fragmented. There is no brand loyalty from the consumer side. And so when I think about looking for a new place to live, the brand isn't the first thing that comes to mind because I don't know anything. I don't, even if I've seen the property might look nice, but I don't have any kind of emotional association connection to it. So if that's the case, then the way that I behave and the way that I shop is very different because now it's not, I'm not looking for XYZ brand. Now, most people still today are looking for, I need a two bedroom near downtown Salt Lake City.
Yeah, man, that was beautiful. We've been thinking about little quotes from these podcasts that we want to put on billboards ourselves. The out of market shopper, that was just a giant light bulb over my head. I completely agree. We act like, you know, that person is dead to us the time they sign their lease, right? And then we don't think about, or if they're you know, the dead lead, the disqualified lead, that we just move on from them. So what is the, I'm going to double click on this. This wasn't in our list of questions, but I completely agree that today our entire leasing process, the entire proverbial funnel is built around the in-market shopper. I mean, every one of my demos starts with an inbound inquiry, right? That's where everyone wants to start their journey. Where are the opportunities then to go to the out-of-market shopper? I mean, my head goes to, you touched on loyalty and you touched on a lack of brand. I think some of our partners that we love working with are the ones who are actually putting their names on the property. And so the reminder email that says, hey, your rent is due, or the survey that says, hey, you had a maintenance request. To me, that feels like low-hanging fruit, but is that the best opportunity to find the out-of-market shopper? Or what else can marketers be doing, especially in a bad environment, to go outside the walls of, you know, my funnel?
I think that taking community outreach to a different level is certainly an avenue. I think, you know, better engagement with residents and giving them opportunities to introduce their friends and their family is an avenue. But like, you know, really getting involved with, you know, show up at farmers markets, get involved with community organizations and community philanthropies, figure out a way to get involved with your city's marathon. And, you know, I guarantee that we worked with a client. They have four properties along the route of the Chicago Marathon. And so we put together a whole 3-month program for them leading up to it, where they had resident run clubs and training. And then they had, you know, other residents who weren't running could make signs and go out and cheer for folks. And they had swag and they had equipment and water bottles and a tent outside cheering people on. And all of that is in service of, we just want to be seen and visible in the community. And it's not four separate properties. For them, it was, here's the property management company. We have properties all over town that you're going to love. Come check us out and see how we're engaged in the community.
That's phenomenal advice and very exciting for marketers, because that's not just your generic, you know, what you hear at the panel. Let's talk about PPC and SEO. That is, take what's unique to your brand, to your strategy, to your location, and then work it into a campaign that is, you know, physical, it is digital, but it all correlates. That's a wonderful example. Mm-hmm. I know last time I was in Atlanta, I started to hear some of our partners like a Cortland, who's heavily invested in similar strategies and they're putting their name on the properties. When people ask, what do you do? And I said, we work with companies like Cortland. They'd say, you know, Uber driver said, well, I know who that is. Yep. I know their properties, right? So there's this brand awareness for the out-of-market shopper.
Post properties from back in the 90s, right, with all the tulips and everything else. But it's like, I think that's the biggest opportunity for us, is how do you get to the point where we spend so much time competing against ourselves? And we've done the research on this. We have another client, 10 properties in Denver, and they're all running PPC. And 60% of their keywords were shared across five or more properties. So not only are you competing against your comps, and you're not only competing against your ILSs, you're competing against yourself and raising prices and spending 5 times more than you should on advertising because they're not making the effort to build the brand. Yeah. And if they take that and say, hey, we do want to build the brand, we have places for you all over town. Come check out the Cortland property that's in your neighborhood. It's amazing what that ambient awareness. I've heard of Cortland. I kind of know what they're about. I think I had a friend who lived there. I'm going to trust that name before I trust anything else, because I think I know it from somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I think you and I have been evangelizing for some time pre-market downturn, these concepts of portfolio leasing, what folks call centralization. Have you seen the macro environment shift the focus? Because you said two things there. So certainly you and I are huge advocates for think of your portfolio, don't think of the individual assets, think of your brand. But you also touched on kind of the cost savings, right? Of today, I am competing against myself. And I'm curious, as you think about, you know, your 15 years of 30 lines experience, and you've been through downturns before, what's unique about the challenges, and what's unique in what you're hearing from your partners and prospective customers about what this downturn means for them, right? The economic headwinds of, you know, debt being more expensive, demand being down. How is that translating into the pains that they're trying to solve?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that they're trying to solve for right now is, how do we do this without giving away the house, right? Like, how do we do this without, we see that our competitors are giving away 1, 2, 3 months free. I don't want to do that. And we feel like we have a lot of value to deliver. How do we set ourselves apart? And how do we communicate that from everything from leasing training of our people all the way through to what do we communicate online to set ourselves apart? I think that's probably the biggest thing that we're seeing right now is just avoidance of concessions to try and, you know, maintain economic occupancy and hit the numbers that you want. But, you know, the other thing that we see is people really trying to look ahead at, you know, yes, there's a downturn that, you know, is potentially looming. In some markets it's here, right? But I think the other piece of that we've seen is more apartment deliveries in hot markets than we've ever seen before. And so it's less demand at the same time as we have massive deliveries and massive deliveries of lease-ups that are kind of ready to give away concessions. So we have to figure out how we can compete with that and how we you know really deliver value when the brand new property on the block is given away 2 months free.
Yeah, no, that really is a challenge. And like you said, every market's a little bit unique. And we do have a lot of folks from all over the country. So if you were to give advice to a marketer kind of looking ahead of that corner, and perhaps, especially let's talk about that scenario you just talked about, the most challenging of, let's say I'm in Nashville, right? Or Tampa, these markets that were super hot, 20% year-over-year rent increases, but now they're getting thousands of new units coming into their market. Yeah, you know, this beautiful brand new building, 3 months. Like you said, the worst lever that I could pull as an operator or marketer would be, well, we need to give away six, right? What are the other, how do they adapt? How do I even adapt to that point? Because, you know, my product is my product, but the market has changed dramatically. So any advice to that? That's a real conundrum.
I mean, it's all about positioning value, right? And I think that there's a lot of different ways that you can deliver that. Sometimes it could be customer service. It could be price anchoring. It could be, hey, here are all the amenities that we offer, and here are the things that you're not going to need to pay for when you move in with us. Make sure that people see that. But what I really see, and this is something that we really started digging into this at AIM last year with AI, is we're now using AI to help identify unmet needs in the market. So I can look at other comps websites. I can look at their ratings and reviews. I can look at what people are clamoring for in the market, and then take that to a customer and say, here's what renters are looking for. Here are the, you know, the top kind of segments of the audience that we see that are really looking for this submarket. And here are the things that are missing that they're looking for. Maybe it's co-working spaces, or maybe it is more resident events, or maybe it's EV charging stations or something like that. It's different in every market. But we can really, because we now have the ability to analyze more data than ever quickly and accurately, we can really start to look at where are the unmet needs of the market, and how do we laser focus on targeting that with our messaging.
That's fabulous. That gets me very excited on the AI side at Funnel. We're thinking a lot about how do we better leverage the voice of our customer, yep, right? So, you know, a shared 30 lines Funnel partner like BH, you know, we process millions of pieces of communication for someone like that. And what is the customer telling us, and how can we leverage AI to surface that? And hey, this community happens to have a lot of you know, you fill in the blank type of demographic. One of the things, Mike, that I'm curious
I want to hit on that for a second because this is where we talk a lot in the industry about point solutions and different pieces coming in. We really try and take a holistic, like the example you just gave is a perfect example of not only do you want to learn what is the customer asking for, but how do you then take that to make the rest of your marketing better? Because if I can look at all of the questions and all of the messages and comments of what are people asking for in this market? What are they asking about at this property? That now tells me, what does my SEO strategy look like for the next 6 months? How do I need to shift my ads? What are the FAQs that I need to put in my Google posts? And how do I rotate in some social content that starts to address some of those questions or objections or things like that? It's customers are telling us exactly what they want, what they're looking for. Too often it's getting buried in a chatbot or getting buried in a form, and we need to figure out ways to extract that and then give it back to the marketing team and say, run with this.
Love that. Yeah, I feel the burden of that as well. We have all the communication for our partners in one place, and we need to make it more accessible to inform those decisions. And if I really think about your answer to how do I compete in such a difficult environment, it is know your customer and differentiate to that customer.
Yep.
One of the challenges that we've all heard, you know, I like to joke that, you know, we compete primarily against the PM softwares. The only vendors that get more pushback in the industry than those guys are the ILSs, right?
Yep.
You really want to rile somebody up. You talk to a marketer about the ILSs. And one of the complaints, you know, and we all love them. We compete with them. We partner with them. You integrate with them. But one of the complaints is that they level the playing field to the highest bidder to them. And you just talked about, hey, if I am, you know, in a market where I've got these concessions, if I know my customer, I can speak to them. Isn't that difficult in the ILS dominated world in which, you know, we kind of go to the lowest common denominator, which is who paid for the premium, you know, monthly ad. So how do I break free from that in this testing environment? And I'm sure you're hearing a lot of folks are, you know, it's tight budget season. Are they throwing more dollars at the trusted old ILSs? Is there more angst than ever saying we got to get away from that because we can't compete? I mean, how do I think about ILSs today?
I kind of think about this back. I think about this upside down. I actually start at the bottom of the funnel and work our way up. And I look at every single touch point and every single conversion point and what are the conversion rates there and how do we make each one better? We know that if I can help our leasing team at a property, if I can help them improve their closing rate by 10%, let's say 300 basis points, if they can go from 35% closing to 38, 39% closing. If they can do that in the office, I can cut the amount of traffic at the top of the funnel by 50% without affecting leasing velocity at all. So, and then you take that up. So what can I do to increase my lead to show ratio? What can I do to increase my website conversions and get more leads and capture more opportunities from the traffic that I'm getting from wherever they're getting to our website? Same thing with, like, you know, Google Business and local listings. There's a lot of opportunities there. But if I can work each of those numbers as I go up the funnel, all of a sudden, I don't have to buy as much traffic because I don't need to generate as much awareness because the rest of my marketing machine is running more efficiently. And then you add in, you know, some of the exciting things that we're seeing with automation and renewal marketing, and you take it even further down the funnel, that's where I get really excited is, you know, how do you take care of the rest of the life cycle, build a really efficient marketing machine, and then when you come back to it, you go, okay, now we don't need to buy as much traffic as we thought we needed, as we have traditionally needed. And so we save a ton of money.
I love that answer. Yeah, I think all of us in this market, because you and I as technologists, you know, in the multifamily space, there's headwinds for all of us, right? And so, you know, as a CEO at a technology company, the name of the game right now is efficiency. And so I think starting at the bottom of the funnel and thinking, what if we lost would really hurt us? What could we lose and still have great conversion? It allows you to focus in.
Yep.
But then I think I love your answer as well about, well, that also, if you can kind of focus into the core value drivers for your conversions and your, you know, demand, then what experiments can I run on the side? So that gets me excited, Mike, and thinking about kind of where we are, but also really where we're going.
Yep.
You know, let's say I'm an operator that is, you know, I've fully embraced centralization. What are some exciting levers that perhaps I haven't pulled in the past. You talked about renewals. You talked about kind of marketing to the folks that are out of the market. Are there any examples that come to mind for you that, you know, historically folks have just thought, you know, I can't even do that. I'm just going to play the normal playbook. But if I really skinny my playbook, what experiments should I be running with, you know, centralized and portfolio style operations?
Email.
Email.
You asked for sexy and exciting. It's not sexy or exciting at all until you see the numbers. Every single client that we have that invests in email marketing, especially on a regionalized level like this, they're blown away by the returns that they see and the amount of the bump that they see in traffic. And let's just walk through a scenario, right? If I have a mini ILS page, if I have a, you know, if I'm Cortland and I have a page that talks about apartments in Atlanta and has all my communities there, one of the first things that we see is as soon as they exhibit any kind of browsing behavior, I can say, hey, looks like you might need some help. Why don't we have one of our relocation specialists, one of our neighborhood experts, get a hold of you? You know, tell us what you're looking for. Give me a move-in date and maybe how many bedrooms you want. I already know from their browsing behavior what neighborhoods they were interested in or what properties they were checking out. So now I have some context to start personalizing a conversation. The follow-up to that person is really, really helpful. It is, hey, Tyler, I saw you're looking for a three-bedroom and you want to be somewhere near Midtown. We actually have 5 amazing options. Let's talk a little bit about what you really want. Let's talk about your must-haves and your deal killers. And let's see if we can't point you to 2 or 3 properties that are that could be a great fit for you. And the marketer is also looking at, where do I have stale units? Where do I have properties that need attention? What are units that could be a good fit for them that maybe they didn't see before? And so you can start to shift behavior and point people to the properties and the units that you have that need more attention. All of that can be done with some really simple old school technology. Let's call it that, you know? And that's something that our industry, frankly, doesn't do enough of. I love the fact that we've really leaned into marketing automation and lead nurturing and the things to get people in the door, ask for the tour, right? Whether it's through your technology or some of these other scheduling assistants that are out there, that's amazing technology. We have to do more to sell the brand value. We have to do more to help the customer. And we have to do more to help them identify why us in the first place, because by the time that they've selected a property, they're probably 60-65% of the way through their search when they've raised their hand at an individual property. So I want to get ahead of those. I want to get in front of those prospects way earlier in the process and then nurture them before my comps even know that they're in market.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really interesting for us, like another new 30 Lines funnel partner, Windsor, what's always fun to find out is like, where are they starting from? And if you don't have a centralized view of your customer, you have no idea how often this is organically happening. Yep. But I think what's really cool is what you just alluded to is that that number is not fixed, right? If I have density in Buckhead or South Florida, and I'm seeing that 1 in 5 renters inquires in multiple communities, well, that's your starting point, right? And everything you just talked about, if I could find that person wherever they are in their journey, and ideally to your point earlier on, and you guide them towards your availability, then we have seen clearly that the consumer is not overly fixated on Arbor's Glen, yep. Right? They're telling you what they want, right? They want a 2-bedroom with a pool in this neighborhood. Well, if you have multiple, they're open to that, especially, and I love what you said, you know, I think you've said it before, email is prop tech, right? Like, let's take advantage of the tools that we have through a combination of human-centric approaches, automated approaches, artificial intelligence. But if you meet that consumer early rather than hit them with 4 spam emails tomorrow, there's a lot of variability there in terms of performance and conversion rather than just saying, oh, well, you know, we're struggling with leads at one community.
It's amazing how many people are very, very responsive to a very simple email like, hey, here are our top 2-bedroom deals in Atlanta this week. That's it.
Yeah. We actually, for the longest time, we're huge believers in email. We didn't. So 2 funny things. One, we would push back on our customers really trying to get us to build glossy HTML emails because we're like, they just don't work as well as a short, you know, maybe even with a little grammatical error in it, email that looks real rather than, you know, your really beautiful pictures. Yep. And two, it's been shocking to us how many companies have gone out of industry to buy a HubSpot, Pardot, you fill in the blank. Yep. And again, in many cases, those are technologies that are 10 plus years old because they have such a gap. They say, well, I'm good at getting the tour scheduled with my workflows, but I have no tooling to make sure that I'm nurturing, right? So yeah, it is a surprising big gap that still exists in multifamily.
Well, you know, it's a gap that you're working to solve for years and years and years. We could never even insert a guest card unless that person raised their hand about a specific property. Because when everything is property specific, there's this gap because, you know, we're collecting leads of someone who just says, I need a 2-bedroom near downtown Columbus. There's nowhere for me to put that in the CRM. And also, for a lot of our clients, they didn't have anybody operationally. They weren't organizationally or set up to have someone who could address that lead. But I think as more people see the opportunity, as the software gets a little bit better, now I can put that lead in the CRM. We can nurture them through automation and through technology. And if someone is open to any kind of centralization or any kind of evolution of their org chart, I can even have like, hey, here's a floating leasing agent who now is responsible for these neighborhood leads that come in.
Yeah, I love that. And by the way, I think that is such great career advice for anybody listening to this. If you like the leasing opportunities for the specialist that is the ambassador across multiple properties is phenomenal. There is so much. I get hit up all the time with customers who want to centralize and they're saying, hey, do you have somebody who does multi-site, somebody who's a leasing specialist across properties?
So if that's a person that can also do some short form video through TikTok and YouTube Shorts and Instagram, they are going to crush.
All right, so you just segued perfectly into my last question, Mike. So, you know, we talked about way back when you started and we were talking about MySpace. What new technologies, and you hit us with, you know, the sexiest of technologies is not new. It's, you know, let's use your emails better. But, you know, you just mentioned new forms of marketing that, you know, YouTube Shorts and TikTok. When you think about what's going to catch the marketer flat-footed next, is it a lack of awareness about new potential lead platforms, or is it more about AI and how quickly that's advancing engagement? Like what advice would you give, or what is your prediction, I guess, of looking into the future of what does technology is going to change multifamily marketing the most in the coming years?
I think the technology that's going to change the industry the most is whoever can start to organize the data in a more consolidated way. I firmly believe that we're now at a point where the data is free. It's not free to me. I pay for it. But the data is out there. If I'm an operator and I want to pull in data from my PMS and my CRM and my automation tool and my websites and analytics and you know, free public data out there, it's available. However, we don't necessarily have any vendors right now in the industry that are really focused on consolidating it in a way to really pull together what I consider like connected customer experiences. You know, you're starting to do some of it. And there are some other folks out there that are trying to do some more consolidated resident apps and those kinds of things too. But, you know, if we really want to look at what is the ideal customer experience look like across all of these different tools that we're using, and how do I as a marketer have better data and better insights to make more data-informed decisions, I'm not going to get that from my off-the-shelf BI tools. I'm just not. And I think that if you look at some of the operators, some of the kind of the new wave of property management operators who are coming in with a little bit more of a brand approach and a little bit more of a, hey, they're more tech forward. I think that they're starting to build some of this out. And, you know, that's where we're going to get caught by surprise, is things that data is king, data is gold, and we have to find ways to make it talk to each other, to make it really useful for us and for our customers.
Man, you got my wheels turning on that. You're right. I mean, Funnel is playing a part in that, but we're very focused on the workflow more than the collection of the data. And I think talking with you, Mike, makes me realize we need to service our customers better. So I've got all sorts of roadmap ideas. Ben, our chief product officer, is not going to be happy about this. All right, so we're going to finish here with some rapid fire questions, Mike. This has been a ton of fun. We could do this for hours. I'm adding one here because looking at my Funnel hoodie and your 30 Lines jacket, I'm realizing I don't even know the genesis of the 30 Lines brand. So first rapid fire question, why 30 Lines? Where does that name come from?
2008, there was some research coming around that came out about how you and I and everybody else, when we were online, we're all impatient. We want answers, right? And that's still the name of the game today, is we want answers when we go online. 2008, we had people said, if you weren't on the first three pages of Google, then you weren't going to be discovered. So at that point, it was pages of blue links, 10 per page. So you had to be in the first 30 lines if you wanted to show up in front of your potential customers. I joke today that if I had to name the company today, it'd be more like 6 lines max.
That's very true. All right. Wow, that's awesome. I should have known that, but that's great. All right. So here's our normal one. So if you and your beautiful family, Mike, decided, hey, you know what? We're going to take a break. We're going to go work on a philanthropic cause that we're passionate about. What would that be? What is it that gets the Whaling family going? What is it, your personal passion outside of clearly the multifamily passion that you and I share? Is there any philanthropic cause or social cause that is near to your heart?
I mean, listen, you know, I think I don't necessarily know that there's one philanthropy, but we have to figure out a way to accelerate our energy transformation and how we use energy in a smarter ways globally. And, you know, I have some thoughts and some things are around that. But for me, the big one is housing. It's housing changes lives. Housing elevates lives. I'm on the board here in Central Ohio. I'm on the board of the Housing and Shelter Board for the YMCA. And the YMCA is the second largest affordable housing provider here in the region. And, you know, between NIMBYs, between poor zoning, between redlining and the history of how we approached housing in the past, between, you know, the desire for the American dream and the lack of clarity around what people actually need. We have to find better ways to support people and get them into housing that fits for them. You know, we're privileged to work with some of the best operators in the country that are delivering top-notch, world-class communities. That's not for everybody. And we have to figure out a way to provide housing for, you know, supportive folks who are transitioning out of homelessness. We have to find ways to find the support for, you know, the every man and every woman who are trying to make a living in Tampa, Florida, or in Nashville, and they've seen their rent go up 40% over the past 2 or 3 years. I'm not saying that this is something that the industry has to solve, but there's a lot of need there. And I think that there's a lot of people trying to solve it. And, you know, that's what I'm passionate about.
I agree. There's no one company that's going to solve it. I'll give a plug to we love to work with Entryway. They're our philanthropic partner with Home, which is our own charity. But there's not one thing. It is all the above. And we as an industry have to take ownership of that. We can't be the ones that are, you know, really having the finger pointed at us for making it worse. We've got to be making it better. So I love that you, Mike, and your team are
there's so much PR to be done, education, right? Like I want the Jay Parsons of the world and the Kim Duties and some of the folks out there who really dig into the data and understand, like, you know, how much does it really impact us when we see NIMBYism and snob zoning? It is so detrimental to our communities, and we have to figure out ways to educate, you know, municipalities and city councils and neighbors, because, you know, too often the customers that we serve, the renters that we serve, are kind of seen as like second class citizens. Like, hey, you don't own a house. You don't appreciate the neighborhood. And we both know that that's just garbage.
Yeah. 100%. Well, I'm going to skip to my last question then, because everything you just said, I usually ask what would we put on a billboard. I would put any one of those things on the billboard.
I have a billboard for you, but we can keep going. Yeah.
Oh, you do? Let me hear it. No, let me hear your billboard. We got it right here. I'm gonna rent it out to 30.
Well, I mean, listen, this one's amazing.
What do you put?
Thank you, Ted Lasso. But listen, I'm a firm believer that there's no such thing as out of your league unless you choose it to be. And that's what I would put on a billboard. There's no such thing as out of your league unless you choose it.
Is that in reference to you marrying up?
I mean, I absolutely married up. You're the third person this week to tell me that, by the way.
Hey, man, we got a lot in common. I told you that. We have a lot in common. Well, that's wonderful. I agree. I mean, who would have told you 15 years ago that you'd be running this organization, right? You're only out of your league if you allow yourself to be. I love that. Well, and all right, last one here. So obviously we share a lot in common. We like to ask folks. So our tagline is, you know, renter-centric, and it means a lot to us. But to you, it's not 30 Lines tagline, but clearly it's part of your ethos. What is 30 Lines, or to Mike, what does it mean to be renter-centric?
I think that you have to understand the customer, and you have to understand how their behavior shifts as they move through the journey of realizing that they have to start shopping, all the way through to potentially finding a place and going to see it if they want to do it in person, all the way through to what does the renter experience look like. You know, for me, we focus on the marketing piece, and we already talked about everything there and the opportunities. I really think that there's an opportunity to elevate what the living experience looks like. If you're really renter-centric, it is, how do we make sure that we have programming in place so that people can really take advantage of all of these amazing amenities that we've invested in? How do we create more renters by choice at every income level so that people see this as something that they want to continue to do and not just bounce to the next place that's offering a better concession? That to me is renter-centricity at the core. And then it's, okay, how do we market to those folks? How do we get in front of them and align with where they're shopping and how they shop? That's renter centricity for me.
Great answer. Yeah, I could hear it in your voice when you're talking about how genuinely you view the third of Americans that are renters and that they are not second-class citizens. And when we really understand them, there's so much then that we could invest from a technology, operational, marketing perspective. Well, Mike, this has been phenomenal. I knew this would be fun, but it was even better than I had hoped. So for those who don't follow 30 Lines today, how do they keep track of you guys? Hopefully a lot of folks want to find out more about your services.
Yeah, for sure. So you can visit our studio. 30lines.com is our website. RentPress is our platform. That's rentpress.io. That's our apartment marketing platform that we're building out. We have 20 other agency partners that are building apartment websites on top of RentPress today. We touch about 2,000 properties nationwide through that platform. So rentpress.io. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so you can catch me there.
Excellent. Well, Mike, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you have questions or ideas, we would love to hear from you. Please send us an email or a voice memo to marketing@funnelleasing.com and we'll respond on the show.